when I finally agreed to write the book with Aaron, I said, this definitely needs to be talked about. We need to have a perspective on both of us and really talk about communication aspect of miscarriage mm-hmm. and how it does break down a marriage or a partnership.
This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 586 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with Franklin residents and authors Aaron and MJ Govea. You may recall that Aaron and I talked about his first book, Outdoors on the Town Common, in May of 2020. We had this conversation in the Franklin Public Library, in the Franklin Public Radio Studios on Hutchinson Street. MJ joined us for this session as she is co-author of their new book, Men and Miscarriage. A key quote from the intro to the new book, when it comes to men and how they're impacted by these issues, it's almost complete radio silence. We had a great conversation to help break this radio silence, yes, pun intended, on this topic of miscarriage and how it affects both members of the relationship. My kudos to both of them for starting the conversation on this tough topic. The statistics show that 1 in 4 women do experience a miscarriage. Half the battle is knowing you are not alone. In some of my own conversations after this recording session, it's been enlightening to find how many folks I talk with who reveal that they have had 1 or more miscarriages in their immediate or extended family. One key takeaway you'll hear about is to ask someone, how are you doing? The show notes include links to the Amazon book page, Aaron's Daddy Files book webpage. MJ tends to avoid social media, although she does occasionally write and post on Aaron's page. The recording runs about 32 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with MJ and Aaron. So, Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR.FM, anywhere in the internet, in 102.9 on the local Franklin area dial. Today, in the studio, yes, one of the first times in this coming out of the pandemic period, in the studio with Aaron Govea and MJ Govea to talk about their new book, Aaron's second book. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, Aaron? Refresh for the listeners who may not remember that. Oh, yeah, Steve and Aaron talked. It was over a year ago already.
It was. It was May of 2020, just before my first book, which is Raising Boys to Be Good Men, came out. And I remember we were on the common with, you know, everyone was masked up and
distanced. Yeah. We had a blanket in between us.
Yeah, this is much nicer in the studio. This is an impressive place you guys have here. But yeah, a lot's happened since then. So the first book's been out for a little over a year, and it was, you know, pretty well received, which was fantastic. And you know, right around the time that came out, my publisher said, "Do you have any ideas for a second book?" And I just kind of mentioned off the top of my head what I had been thinking about, which was a pretty unexplored topic. So mm-hmm. how miscarriage and infertility and pregnancy loss affects men.
Right.
Which sounds weird and counterintuitive because...
Well, yeah. So before we go there, MJ, you're certainly part of that, and then you actually helped at least tell your part of the story as this book comes out, from what I understand so far. So tell us a little bit of your story and then kind of lead in.
I was kind of hesitant about writing the book. I'm a very personal person. And for me to tell my story and bring it out was very hard. But through a lot of coaching and love Aaron gave me, I was able to tell my story and be able to bring the book to light.
Yeah, and that's, you know, MJ's voice was so important. And that was honestly the hardest part of, before we even started writing, you know, I had to get MJ on board because, let's face it, I don't think you can be, a guy writing about miscarriage and have it only be your voice. That's pretty
Well, what do you
hard.
Have to say about that? You didn't do that. You did part of it, but you didn't do the real part of it.
Well, so sure.
And
I mean, you know, it's already such kind of a taboo topic, and that's just among women who this is, you know, or the person carrying the baby, that's who it's happening to. Yeah. And so that's part of the problem, though. It feels selfish if you're the partner of one of those people to say, oh, you know, I'm hurting too. And it's like, well, am I even allowed to say that? Because it's not happening to my body.
Right.
But that's kind of the whole point of the book. It does impact you. And, you know, MJ and I, unfortunately, had 5 losses. We have 3 kids and we're immeasurably grateful for that. But we had 5 losses along the way to get there. And they happened at all different stages, some in the first trimester, one pretty late in the second trimester, which was really hard. And so I just felt that we needed MJ's perspective on this, because it's the book is about how it impacted me.
Mm-hmm.
But a huge part of that story is how I behaved and how I acted and what I was feeling impacted our marriage.
Sure.
And our relationship. And so it's really interesting. And in the book, we actually use different fonts, so you know who's talking in the book, whether it's my perspective or MJ's. And it's amazing looking back, you know, we look at the same history of events in our lives very differently.
Two different viewpoints, certainly. Yes.
And I learned a lot. We learned a lot about each other because we wrote this in a Google Doc. And, you know, I'd write a chapter and then she'd write a response and I'd be downstairs saying, what? Really? That happened? You felt like that? And so, you know, it just goes to show if we had communicated a little more at the outset, things would have been a lot different. But guys aren't, you know, we're not supposed to communicate. We're supposed to be strong and silent and
man up,
not ask for help, you know, and be a rock. And that's a recipe for disaster, which is that's a big theme.
And in the course, and for disclosure and honesty as well, the book just came out. I did download it to Kindle. I haven't had a chance to complete it yet. I did read your prior book, but I think also after the interview as well. So it's not so much this is an interview about a book review. This is a conversation about Franklin folks who happen to be writing a book around a tough topic.
Yeah.
And to your point, it's not something that most folks are comfortable with talking about. There's still a whole lot of taboo and stigma around it. So that, I think, is one of the key pieces that you finally came to say this needs to be a discussion.
Yeah, we both said, you know, when I finally agreed to write the book with Aaron, I said this definitely needs to be talked about. We need to have a perspective on both of us and really talk about communication aspect of miscarriage and how it does break down a marriage or a partnership,
right?
From the lack of communication, because I thought he was uncaring when that was not the case at all. He was suffering just as much as I was suffering.
Yeah,
and you know, like you said, you know, we're not experts in anything. We don't have academic credentials. We don't have medical credentials. You know, we don't claim to be experts. We're just two people who live in Franklin who had some bad luck in this department. But, you know, in researching the book, you find out that 1 in 4 women will have a miscarriage. So that means 1 in 4 of your neighbors, your friends, have dealt with this.
Right.
And, you know, by some estimates, almost half of all pregnancies end in miscarriage. So this is way more common than we think. And, you know, you mentioned how it's a tough topic. So that's something that was very difficult for us, because when we put this out there, we said, hey, we're going to write this book about, you know, men and miscarriage. And the initial reception was great. People said, oh, this is so needed. This is a wonderful idea. And I didn't want it to just be our story. So I set out to interview people from all areas and all walks of life and all backgrounds.
Yep.
And at first people signed up for interviews, and this is all over Zoom because it was during the pandemic. Yep. But quickly found out, you know, it's tough to talk about it. And we got ghosted more often than not, way more often than not. And I don't blame any of those people for not wanting to talk about it. I think they had good intentions and they wanted to. And then in the end, it was just too hard. And that's part of it. So we sent out a survey that was taken by, I think, 60 or so people, which gave us some baseline data. And then we were able to conduct in-depth interviews with 9 people.
Okay.
So that's, you know, in the book, it really, all of these topics are filled with illustrations and narratives from these 9 people that
from
we
real
interviewed.
Lives. Other real people, lives. Yep. Normal U.S.-based, around the world, wherever.
Yeah, they're from, this was most are in the U.S. There are a couple from outside the U.S. So you know, and it's all races and backgrounds and everything else. It's a good sampling of people. I would have liked to have more. I'm not going to lie. I would have liked to have more people, but it's such a tall ask. It's such a tough ask to have people recount some of the worst, most trying times of their lives. And that's what, you know, I'm so grateful to these nine who helped us out and shared, because they lost pregnancies at 6 weeks and they lost them at 38 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, it runs the gamut, and it's tough to read, but it's so important. Some of the findings from these people and some hearing their stories, just half the battle is knowing you're not alone when you're going through this.
Right.
And really, you know, for men, men tend to be quiet, reserved, not ask for help. And that can get destructive. You know, I think sometimes our default emotion as men is anger. And if you're already sad and angry, you know, the men in the book, they started talking about having drinking problems and, you know, gambling problems and staying out late. They were, because they couldn't deal with it. And so the real message is, you know, ask for help. Asking for help is a sign of strength, not weakness.
True.
And we wanted to get that across.
Yeah, that's a good message. Yeah. And I'm totally in awe. Losing five, that, I'm proud that you were able to take the step to share the story, because, yeah, it needs to be said. As you, I think in the intro, you said there's, I don't know that there's other books like this, or certainly there's not a whole lot of them, period. So,
yeah. Yeah. It was definitely, we recognized it as an underserved market. There are a few books out there, you know, for men, but most of them for women, and rightly so. Mm-hmm. You know, this book never claims to say that, you know, men or, you know, the people not carrying the baby, that they have a tougher time with this. I think the people carrying the baby have a tougher time with this, and that's made pretty clear. But that doesn't mean that other people don't suffer and have negative effects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough one, but I think it's a vital one, and I hope we see it. We've gotten some good coverage early on. CNN featured us. Fatherly, which is a great parenting website. There's an article coming out for Scary Mommy, which I know is a big one. So we're just, and the Franklin Library is going to have an event, I believe, September 1st.
September 1st?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's coming up. It's in the planning stages now, but that'll be something we hope we can get a bunch of Franklin people to and have a great conversation.
Yes, by all means. Yeah, because I know one of the other radio shows that's done here at the studios with Safe Coalition, which deals with substance abuse, which also has similar, I don't want to say similar, there are also stigmas and tough conversations around that, too. And that conversation is at least starting. So this is going to start, hopefully, at least with this conversation. And who knows, maybe some of the other 60, you got nine, the 50 something will come back and look to have that conversation now that at least they've been given kind of the opening, kind of the front porch here. It's here.
Yeah. And the other thing that's really interesting when doing the research on, you know, because anytime you write a book, you got to figure out who's going to buy the book, who's your audience, right?
Right.
And so it would seem when you write a book for called Men and Miscarriage that men would be your target audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually not true. Women are the target audience here. You know, and as a parenting blogger for almost, you know, 14 years now, it's funny, women, moms have always been about 70% of my audience.
Yes.
And that holds true for this book, because men are not the ones going out in large number to buy these things. It's going to be women who are wondering, is this how my boyfriend or husband is feeling?
Yep.
Is this, you know, might this shed some light on it since he won't talk to me about it? And so it's kind of a look behind the curtain. It's a peek behind the curtain for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, please, just because it's Men and Miscarriage, don't think that this is a book just for men. This is largely geared toward moms who might be wondering, like, why isn't he talking to me? Why doesn't he care? And the answer almost all the time is he does care. He just doesn't know if he's allowed to grieve. He doesn't know if he's allowed to mourn like this.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know what he's allowed to do, and he doesn't want to be a burden, which he also can't tell you about. So it's just this self-fulfilling downward spiral that's really tough to break out of until you start communicating.
Yeah, we're kind of living in this almost fake box world, right?
Yeah.
Where there's limitations that are being set by society, perhaps inappropriately, because there needs to be more of a, and I want to misuse the term, a holistic approach to something. And I think one of the other quotes in the, or at least that comes to mind, even when your doctors, MJ, they weren't even, they were treating the problem, but they weren't even asking how you were doing.
No, that was very hard for me because they had known that it was several miscarriages had happened over a course of, you know, years.
Mm-hmm.
And they still treated the problem and not the whole person.
Right.
They were worried about why I was having the miscarriages and talking more about that road, but never actually asked me, are you okay? Are you and Aaron okay?
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys talking? And that was a huge problem because they, and that was a theme even among friends of mine.
Okay. Your other support circles, if you will.
Yeah. Nobody asks how you are actually doing. Other moms ask because they have gone through it, or,
right.
But your doctor, you figured, would be the first person to ask you.
And they were focused on the health side, the medical aspects of this and that, not necessarily the person side, if you will.
Yeah. I wish, looking back now, obviously, I have hindsight.
In hindsight, it's always 2020, right?
I wish there was a support group that I could have gone to. That they had offered, said, hey, you know, a local hospital offers this group for whether it be just women, couples, you know, whatever it is. It meets once a month. I might have been able to get just a little bit of normalcy
mm-hmm.
out of it, you know,
right.
Something other than feeling depressed about myself, saying that I did something.
Right. Right. What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Shudder. Yeah.
So it's hard, you know, it's tough to write a book like this because it's not the happiest of topics, you know.
It's
not this feel good thing, but in the end it's a conversation that I think we need to drag out of the shadows a little bit and
mm-hmm.
shed some sunlight on, because guys are hurting. I mean, and you can read about all the perspectives from many different people in this book. Especially, I mean, there are some who just had one or two, then there are others who went through IVF and just were decimated time and time and time again.
IVF for those in vitro
fertilization.
Just,
yep. And so that's when you have the, you know, you got to take the shots and you got to have the egg retrieval and the fertilization, and
there's an entire process.
Big process, big expensive process for most people, and that can get absolutely demoralizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting hearing how the difference in how these problems are looked at from men and women. There's one story pops to mind. This husband and wife were going through IVF and they found this support network, and they started going to the group. And at one point in the group, the men went with the men and the women went with the women. And when they came back, you know, his wife said, oh my goodness, that was amazing. We talked, we cried, we hugged. It was just a soul-altering experience, and I'm so grateful for this. This is so amazing. They're like, you must have had the same thing. And he just kind of laughed and looked at her and said, no. She said, well, what do you mean? He said, we went in, and no one really talked. And then when they did talk, they started blaming the doctors and trying to pinpoint the blame and figure. He's like, it was like, you know, a bunch of guys opening a car hood and looking and trying to figure out what was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, right there is the big societal difference.
Right.
You know, you kick the tires, you don't talk about anything, you try and find blame instead of just sitting with that grief and kind of just dealing with it and realizing how uncomfortable it is, but also if you address it, how freeing it can be. And I think women have the latitude to do that for the most part. Men, not so much.
Haven't been given permission to do so.
Yeah, and they don't even, you know, they haven't given permission and they don't always have the tools.
Right.
You know, that's weakness.
Yes.
And you're not allowed to be weak. So it's just, you know, time and time again, themes like that came up in this book. And, you know, this book, it's not going to solve anything, but it's, I think anytime you can take a step toward having the conversation, it helps just a little bit, and we need incremental change and tons of these conversations to happen. So
mm-hmm.
this is our small contribution.
Yeah, so I think one of the other quotes that certainly caught my eye based upon what we were doing, then coincidentally doing here, you know, there's been a lack, almost a a radio silence on this topic. So now at least we're addressing that. We are in the radio studio creating something on the radio. So hopefully people will listen to this and then say, hey, oh yeah, let me find out more and, you know, continue the conversation.
Yeah. And that's, at the end of the day, that's the whole point of this book. And I'm so grateful to MJ because she's not a writer. She did this way out of her comfort zone at my begging and urging, but the book is better for it. And, you know, her perspective is some of the best in there, I think. And it was really illuminating to learn some things that even years later, I didn't know. And, you know, I think that if similar conversations happen with people who read the book and the couples who read the book, I think they'll be the better for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm hopeful for that. That's why we're doing this. Yeah, indeed. So other kind of lessons or advice, clearly have the conversation. Be aware of terminology, I would assume, or be aware of other perspectives, because there are a variety of perspectives in this space, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's, you know, that's why I think the second chapter is all about statistics and facts about miscarriage, because there's a lot of misinformation. People think miscarriage is caused by stress or lifting a heavy object, mm-hmm. things like that. That's all not true, you know? And so there's a lot of shame and self-blame that can go on when people don't have all the facts. So, you know, number one, you know, get all the information you can, get the facts. Number two, I mean, definitely communicate. But also, you know, there's a whole, you know, social media plays a big role in all this. And specifically in this way, you know, we found a lot of people had the situation exacerbated because when you... There's this debate among some couples and really society in general. When do you announce you're pregnant? First of all, if you find out at 6 weeks, do you announce it right away? What if you have a miscarriage? Sure. What if you lose? Yeah. What if you wait for 12 weeks, announce it, and then something goes wrong anyway?
Yeah.
And so that's a really interesting conversation because we differed on when to announce it sometimes. And we've done both. You know, we announced it right away, and then we also waited until 12 weeks. And in the end, you know, for me personally, I like sharing, like, good news is good news when it's shared. And I like having the support network there. If you don't tell anybody, then you're just dealing with it alone.
True. Yeah.
Which might be great for some people. It all depends on personality and individual preference. But it was a lonely time trying to deal with that when you hadn't told anybody and no one knows what's wrong.
Right.
There's also, you know, a whole chapter on what not to say to people who have gone through it, because people get uncomfortable. When they get uncomfortable, they try to fill that silence. And a lot of times they say some pretty awful things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you have a miscarriage and you already have a kid, it's like, well, at least you already have a kid. It's like, yeah, that doesn't make it any easier. that doesn't help. Like, there are just some thoroughly unhelpful things to say. And we tried to pinpoint some of those so that people could maybe not say them.
Avoid those triggers.
Yeah.
Don't walk into that landmine.
So all kinds of stuff. I mean, the book, and it's written not to be dense, not to be, you know, comprehensive and filled with.
Right.
It's a quick read. And, you know, I'm a journalist at heart, so it's written in that vein. It's written to be very easy to read and to digest and to hopefully entertain. I think one of the best compliments I've gotten from people who have read the book so far is that they didn't expect to laugh as much as they did while reading the book. And, you know, I hope that other people find that too, because I did try to weave in some humor now and then. I told a story about, cause I had male infertility, and, you know, I told a story about the, you know, submitting the sample and all that stuff. And so it involved transporting in a car and having to keep the specimen at a certain temperature. So I was sitting on it, you know, it's like, it's just crazy the positions you find yourself in when you go into this world of infertility and IVF and all this stuff. So if you can't laugh a little bit, it's going to be a tough road. No,
that's part of the perspective and the holistic thing that I think we were touching on a little bit earlier, that, yeah, laughter is good medicine. As some others have said as well. Yeah. Have you seen of any kind of those support groups Have you seen any indication that those might actually start?
No.
I mean, they exist. The support groups
exist. Some of them exist?
Yeah, and I don't have specific examples.
Understood, yeah.
But, right. I mean, they're online. There's baby loss and pregnancy loss support groups online.
But I'm not sure if he was talking about in-person groups or because...
Because clearly, you know, post-pandemic, maybe we'll get back in person.
Yeah.
But at least there's something somewhere that, you know...
Online is... There's a huge community.
Yeah. Yeah, you can join tons of Facebook groups.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, like...
Yeah, that's not your bag.
It's not my bag. I want to be, like, touchy-feely.
Yeah. Well, it's... especially having spent as much time... Although I try not to spend as much time as I can on Facebook specifically, but even on Twitter and Instagram to a certain... each platform is different in terms of kind of the interactions and how the interactions are there. And I know you're nodding because you're heavily on the social media space. You're apparently a little less so, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But the context of the conversation is generally key. And when you get 140 characters, there's a whole lot left out. And if somebody comes and just picks off on one trigger to then they could be going in a completely different direction than what you're trying to do. And that doesn't help.
Yep.
So.
It is funny, though. Social media is such a double-edged sword for me.
Because,
as I said, the announcements can be really tough. But at the same time, social media kind of saved me personally during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that happened, you know, one of our losses was at 17, 18 weeks. And that was due to a condition called Sirenomelia, which is... also known as mermaid syndrome, where the baby's legs are fused together and there's no kidney, bladder, you know.
Ooh.
And it's not a condition that's compatible with life.
Right.
So the hospital said, all right, we went to Boston and they said, we can get you in 2 weeks. But at that point, you run the risk of having to deliver a stillborn or we can get you into an affiliated clinic now. So we had to make that awful decision trying for our second child. And
I think I had to finally make that decision.
Well, I can't make that decision for you. That's not my role.
But that was also a heated discussion in our house too. Yeah.
I mean, because there's a lot involved with that because, you know, different backgrounds, different beliefs. MJ's Catholic, and to go to a clinic is a tough call for a practicing Catholic.
Yes.
And so
for anyone, I would think, period.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a mindset period, but that's still a tough call.
Yeah. And so that's what we ended up doing. And maybe it's just because we live in blue bubble Massachusetts. I did not expect people to be outside the clinic doing the stereotypical screaming and yelling. Mm-hmm. And yet there they were. And so that was in 2010. And, you know, MJ went in for the procedure and it's surgery. So I can't go in.
No.
So I went out it was the first cell phone I had with a video capability on it at the time. And I just calmly recorded myself talking to these people saying, what on earth do you think you're accomplishing here?
Right.
And that's the first time that I had any experience going viral with anything. But from that incident, MJ and I received tons of emails and notes from people saying, thank you so much. This was so helpful. I had an abortion when I was, you know, 20 years old, 30 mm-hmm. years ago, and no one was there. This is what I wanted to say to them. And all of this support and wonderful stories started pouring in. And at that point, I was not dealing well with the losses.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me personally a sense of purpose. Like, I thought, okay, something good can come of all of this awfulness. And so that's when I really started writing more personally about it. And it was funny, and I detail this in the book. I didn't have the tools or the mental courage to talk to my own wife about that at the time. It was just too painful to talk about how I was feeling. But somehow I could write it down and hit publish and post it to strangers mm-hmm. for them to read.
Right.
And it was really just a way to try and tell her how how I was feeling. Funny thing is, she was so upset that I would talk to the internet masses and not her that she never read any of them. I don't think to this day she's read any of them.
No, I don't. Not from then, no.
So, I mean, it did, you know, social media can be taxing and terrible, but it also picks you up sometimes and wraps its arms around you and supports you. And it did that. I mean, that gave me a sense of purpose and a silver lining to keep going in a very low time.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, everyone's different. You know, there's no right answer for how to do this. You just got to figure it out, and please keep talking to your significant other and figure it out together.
Yeah, I think that's, if anything, that's the one key piece that I get from this bit of the conversation and at least the intro of the book, that if anything, however you had developed your relationship, there were still some things, and I've been married going on 39 years. I'm sure there's some things that I still haven't figured out or she hasn't figured out. But you need to have those bridges built, or at least start crossing them with some conversation,
mm-hmm.
to get to a point of commonality. Not that it's going to get perfect, because life is not perfect.
Exactly.
But at least you're going together more forward, or going forward more together.
Yeah. And you're right. That foundation has to be set, or because this, you know, miscarriage, infertility, all this pregnancy loss, nothing will test a relationship faster. Mm-hmm. Nothing will expose potential cracks mm-hmm. faster than going through all of this. It is hard. It is very, very difficult. And if you don't have that foundation, you're going to be in some trouble.
Right.
So, and communication is at the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really think that you had it in you to even communicate with me until all the protesters were gone and the cop was sitting out front. The first thing I said to him, and go, "What did you do?"
But it just happened?
And his answer was, "Nothing happened. I just took care of everything." Like, and to me at that time, I got it. Like, it made me feel that we were finally communicating, we're on mm-hmm. the same page, that he felt how I felt.
Right.
And it was just a small gesture, but it meant the world to me at the time.
Sure.
And from there, we started communicating more. I wrote a follow-up piece on his blog. So,
which was very rare for her. She had never posted anything before.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, at least for my audience that I've built over the years, it's like when MJ talks, everyone listens because they know that she doesn't do that very often.
The gems come out when MJ writes.
They don't pay attention to me, but they'll pay attention to MJ.
Well, they still pay attention to you to know that MJ's coming. So yeah, but I get the point. Thank you for taking time to come into the studio. Before that, for writing the book and having the conversations, to start the conversation so that we can come into the studio, break the radio silence we've teased so far, and then hopefully more people will have conversations as they go forward.
Yeah, and thank you for having us. These opportunities help a lot. And definitely, you know, if for people who want the book, I would suggest first going to An Unlikely Story, which is the best bookstore around. Mm-hmm. Awesome in Plainville. They're local. It's my favorite bookstore. They do have copies there. We've seen it, and MJ and I might have autographed one of them. So if you go in there, you can look for that.
Sure.
But also, you know, you can get it on Amazon and IndieBound if you want to support local bookstores.
Sure.
So it's available in a bunch of the Barnes & Nobles, including the one in Bellingham.
Okay. Yep. And we'll include in the show notes the appropriate social media links, certainly to follow you, your Twitter account, the Amazon page, the book page.
Awesome.
If you've got any you want to put in there, we can add those too. Although I think there may not be too much.
No, not for MJ.
No.
Well, if there's that specific post, we can put that link. So that they can go drop into the MJ writing specifically in that one. That would be
dig that one out. That's an oldie.
It's an oldie. Give it a new light. Later in a new day. Or a different day. Yeah. Well, again, thank you for taking time to come in. Thank you for sharing your story. I appreciate that. And hopefully the listeners and readers will appreciate and buy more books, have a conversation.
Well, thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.